welcome to today's Valley Talk program here on the Voice of the Valley, KROX in Crookston, Minnesota on AM 1260, 105.7 FM, as well as on 92.1 FM in Grand Forks, East Grand Forks on this Thursday, June 8th. Thank you for joining us on the Valley Talk program. We have Angie Peltier, UMN Extension Regional Educator. And Angie, welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
You know, I'm doing pretty good myself. It's we've done Valley Talk together a couple of times. It's always a pleasure. Always a lot of great information, especially stuff that I get to learn because I'm not too much into your field. Obviously, I work in radio here, so yeah, I'm always interested in your Valley Talks. And well, what would you like to start with today? You have a couple different topics, I believe, you want to go over.
Sure, I do. Actually, you may have heard a couple of episodes ago when I've been in, we were talking about some cover crops trials that we've been a part of. And so I've been spending a lot of quality time down on the ground in soybean fields collecting biomass because we want to know how much of that cover crop actually grew and survived over the winter to grow again this spring, because it could potentially have an impact on our cash crop, so our soybean crop, mm-hmm. in 2023. And so one thing I have noticed over the weeks here is that initially, you know, there were no weeds emerging. And then some of the grass species, so barnyard grass, some smooth brome grass started to emerge in the plots. Then the broadleaves started to come. And so that's kind of what I want to talk about today is the broadleaf weed species. And the biggie in our area is water hemp.
Yep, that rings a bell.
Yes,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so a couple weeks ago, I saw individual little cotyledons, so the little seed leaves, mm-hmm. emerge. And yeah, now they're, some of them are much larger than 4 inches.
Yeah.
And so in weed science, weed management, one of the magic numbers is 4 inches.
Okay.
And that we really recommend that when people are going to be applying a post-emergence herbicide, so herbicides that are applied after the crop has emerged onto mostly weeds that have emerged, that they should do so when those weeds are less than 4 inches tall.
Okay.
And the reason for that, I mean, you might think, why 4 inches?
Yeah, what's that number? Why is that so special? Yeah, exactly.
Seems pretty arbitrary, right? Well, when it comes to weeds, at each of the individual nodes, so where each leaf attaches to the main stem of the plant, mm-hmm. that's called a leaf axle. And in each leaf axle is a growing point. And so if something happens to the top of the plant, for example, the plant can grow back from that growing point.
Okay.
And so the larger the weed gets, the more growing points it has. And when we are going to be spraying a herbicide, we need to try and target all of those growing points, mm-hmm. in order to have that herbicide be as effective as possible.
So obviously the less growing points, the more effective in a sense it'll be, because we don't have to worry about as many growing points. Is that what it is? Or,
right. Yeah. So some of our post-emergence herbicides will have a contact activity. So the only parts of the weed plant that they will negatively impact will be the parts of the plant that the herbicide actually hits.
Mm-hmm.
So some products won't move very far within the plant from that area.
Okay.
And so the less growing points you have, the chances that you'll be able to hit all of them, especially with a contact herbicide, tends to go up.
Okay.
And so that's the magic reason for the magic number.
Huh.
But
wow.
The reason I wanted to bring this up is just because we are starting to see those broadleaf herbicide weed species starting to emerge. And I wanted to tell folks about a resource that I'd be glad to mail to them.
Mm-hmm.
I sent it, I spoke with a different radio station before 7 today.
Oh, geez.
And yes, early morning. But so I put out that plea that anybody that wants to get a weed control guide mailed to them, I'll provide my contact information at the end, so please get a pen and paper handy. So we have a lot of things kind of going on right here. So in hot, dry conditions, which we've had recently, you know, herbicide applications can be complicated. One, weeds are capable of adding a waxy layer, actually, on the outside of their leaves. This makes it more likely to for anything that's applied to kind of bead up and roll off. And so there are, on many of our pesticide labels, the manufacturer will often give recommendations for something called an adjuvant. That is a product that you can add to the herbicide in the tank to make it so that it's more effective.
Okay, to like break through that wax, I'm guessing, or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So one of the main types of adjuvants is called crop oil. Mm-hmm. And that can, because it's an oil, it can break through that kind of fatty layer there in the cell walls and help the product actually make its way into the leaf itself. So look at your label. Obviously, the label's the law. We always talk about that. Everybody's favorite thing to do is read their pesticide label. I'm lying, obviously. But it is the law, so it's important that you're following the law by reading the label. But there's also some really good information in there that can help your application to be as effective as possible. And adjuvants are one of the things that they might talk about in the label. There's also surfactants. So we were talking about the product kind of beating up and rolling off. Well, surfactants help to break that surface tension there. And so instead of beating up, mm-hmm. it kind of spreads that droplet out okay. onto the surface a little bit better. Another reason why we need to think about hot temperatures and herbicides is, you know, the risk of crop injury can be increased in stress conditions. And so, again, paying very close attention to label requirements and recommendations is important to try and reduce the chance of having some injury in your main cash crop there. Another consideration is that our herbicides, some of them can become much more volatile. And so, they're applied as a liquid, mm-hmm. And when they hit the leaf surface, if it's very hot out, they might change into a gaseous form and move off of the target.
Okay.
So not only could that potentially cause you problems, because it's not going to be as effective in your crop necessarily for managing those weeds, but it could cause some off-target injury as well.
Okay.
So there will be recommendations on the label for that in a lot of instances as well. And lastly, as we get closer towards the end of the month, there's something called the dicamba cutoff.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may have heard us talk about these new dicamba tolerant soybeans, relatively new, last five years or longer.
Mm-hmm.
But there's specific formulations of the dicamba herbicide that are approved for applying over the top of one of these dicamba tolerant soybean crops. These are like Extendamax is one brand name. There's Ingenia, Tavium. Down south, their cutoff time is emerging or getting up to us very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
June 12th is
wow.
the cutoff south of I-94. We have a much longer window up here.
Mm-hmm.
One, our crop just isn't as far along.
Yeah.
When it comes to June 12th.
Makes sense, yeah.
and they really think that there should be that dividing line, and so we're the beneficiaries of that.
Mm-hmm.
So up here, north of I-94, the cutoff date is June 30th. So
okay.
we have a couple more weeks to go ahead and get those applications on. I do happen to know, just looking at there's the Fertilizer and Pesticide Management Division at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And they send out a quarterly newsletter where they talk about fines that they basically will enact if somebody doesn't follow the law. And those fines can get pretty pricey if you don't follow that dicamba, those restrictions there. And it seems like they've been fining a lot of people for that lately. So just as an FYI. There's also something important to think about when it comes to temperature, when it comes to dicamba. And that's because there's a temperature application requirement.
Oh, okay.
So if at the time of application or any time during that particular day, the temperature is going to be above 85 degrees, it's unlawful to apply the dicamba herbicide.
Really?
And that, the reason for that is that volatility issue we just talked about.
Okay.
And so it makes sense. It is inconvenient.
I was going to say, it might be a pain, but obviously it's there for a reason.
Right. Yeah. And you know, some of the farmers we were working with, there's a one gentleman near Beltrami for our cover crops trial. He just, there's often wind speed requirements as well for dicamba. It's between 3 and 10 miles per hour is the wind speed window.
Oof, wow.
That's brutal.
That's
up
tough,
here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this guy, I mean, he tried and tried and tried to get into that field, and he just, I mean, it was just too darn windy there for a while.
Yeah, and that's, again, up here especially, that's one of the biggest things you have to worry about, and that obviously can be a very, very bit of a pain, yeah.
Yes, yes. But we do have those 3 extra weeks that other folks further south don't have, so we're sitting a little bit better off there than they are.
True, yeah.
And, you know, also, if you, it's really recommended to try and include a soil residual herbicide in when you're applying your post-emergence herbicides. Mm-hmm. And we have articles, we have recommendations for that. But one thing to keep in mind is we have a lot of very sensitive crops in our rotation.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, we have sugar beets, which tend to be some of the more sensitive crops, canola further north, oats and barley are also pretty sensitive. So some of those soil applied residuals, if you apply or if you grow some of those other crops that I just mentioned, you'll have to be really careful about which of those you apply because the crop rotation interval, so the number of months that needs to pass between when you apply the product and when you plant one of those sensitive crops.
Okay.
Those tend to be pretty long for some of those products. And so 18 months.
Oh, wow.
So let's say this year you're planting, you know, you have soybean in a field and you want to apply some of these soil applied residuals. When it comes time next year to plant barley or sugar beet, not a good idea.
No.
You'll have to wait till the following year.
Yeah, that is, and that's, again, that's on the label, right? I mean,
yes.
that's the thing. You reading the labels, it's so important. Obviously, there's laws on there you got to follow, but it's there to help you out, really, because that can really just wreck our operation right there. That's so important to make sure you know what you're doing.
And every input costs money.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And farmers, you know, they're not running a charity. They, you know, the goal there is to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's so many things that they need to consider. And so when you see those big spray rigs around, know that folks will have read the label. You know, it's not in their best interest to have that product go off-site, off-target,
exactly,
because they need it to be where they apply it.
Mm-hmm.
And so do know that that's the case. But anybody that has an interest in learning a little bit more about weed management or getting a hold of one of these weed control guides, please just give me a call or send me an email. My number is 218-281-8692, and my email is apeltier, that's A-P-E-L-T-I-E-R PELTIER at umn.edu.
All right. Well, yeah, another great program here, Angie. I mean, is there anything else before we wrap up that you want to touch on? I mean, I know you, I think you hit all the points that you say you wanted to talk about. And, but yeah, is there anything else?
We have a couple minutes.
Yeah, we have a couple minutes. I think actually, was there spot a soybean aphid? Is that something you wanted to go over real quick? Yeah, we have a few minutes. We can go over that.
Okay, great. So everybody's favorite topic above and beyond weeds is another pest that robs us of yield. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen any soybean aphid, any large-scale population densities that required an insecticide application mm-hmm. the last couple years. So we've sort of lucked out that way. But I know that folks much further south in the state are starting to see soybean aphids showing up in their soybeans. And so it's just a good time for a reminder now that we have our soybean seedlings are up and out of the soil, something to kind of focus the mind on where you are most likely to see soybean aphids showing up first. Mm-hmm. And that's next to wooded areas. Okay. So anybody in Crookston that understands where the University of Minnesota Crookston's natural history area is, you know, that's a nice wooded area.
Yep.
If there's soybeans growing right next to it, unfortunately this year there's small grains there. Mm-hmm. But that is the first field I check because that's where soybean aphids overwinter. So in the fall, female and male soybean aphids travel from soybean plants over to buckthorn plants, which are kind of small or shorter, shrubs mm-hmm. that grow on the edges and within wooded areas.
Okay.
It's an invasive species, so nobody wants it around, but birds spread it.
Yep.
So it spreads far and wide, and it's difficult to manage. So it's impractical from a soybean aphid management standpoint to try and manage them through removing buckthorn. But it can provide us a clue as to where soybean aphids are going to show up, which fields are going to show up in first. And so, soybean aphids beginning to show up further south, next couple of weeks or so, I would imagine them starting to move after they hatch out of their egg. Mm-hmm. They'll hang out on that buckthorn for a little bit longer, and then they'll get some wings and fly over to soybeans. And so go to your fields that are closest to a wooded area. Have that be the first fields that you scout for soybean aphids, because at least early in the season, that's where they're first going to show up.
Yep.
Come later on, when populations increase, those winged aphids can get up and move from much further away. Mm-hmm. But early season, that's your best bet.
Okay, and obviously if you can catch it early, the best, the better. Obviously, getting ridden. Spotting it earlier is just going to help. It's as simple as that.
Right, so. Because you will want to perfectly time an insecticide application mm-hmm. so that you only will have to do it once.
Exactly.
So you'll wait until you have, on average, 250 aphids per plant.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we call our treatment, basically when we need to treat. Mm-hmm. It's our treatment threshold. Before that, it doesn't pay to spray. After that, you may have already experienced some yield loss in your crop.
Okay, so. Well, that's a very important tip there as well. And we're just about out of time here. So just one more time, just go over your contact information for anybody who has any questions for you. And obviously, you're a full, a huge resource, a lot of information, you and all your staff. So just get that information one more time. Well, I think we'll call it good for today, Andrew.
Sounds good. So it's APEL, as in Larry, T as in Tom, IER at umn.edu. My number is 218-281-8692. Give me a call. Send me an email. I'll be happy to help. If I don't know the answer to your question, I will find it for you.
Just like that. Well, Andrew, again, thank you for your time. We look forward to having you again next week, or next month, rather.
Sounds good. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Once again, that was Angie Pelletier with UMN Regional Educator. So we're going to go ahead and call that good for the Valley Talk program for today.